Okay, Parshas Tolos, page 124. Sorry? No. Page 124, hi. Parshas Tolos, 124. So just to begin with a little overview, as we always do. So of course, this Parsha is the birth of Yaakov and Esav. Dramatic story. This short part of the portion which talks about Yitzchak finding himself in a place called Gerar next to Avimelech because there was a famine. 124. Yitzchak finding himself next to Avimelech in Gerar. The reason being because there was a famine, but Yitzchak wasn't permitted to leave the land of Israel because he was considered a korban, he was considered a sacrifice, a holy person. So he went to the place of Avimelech and there was an issue there with Rivka and so on. Then we have a section which we'll get to later, but a section which deals in somewhat detail with the digging of wells. We find that Yitzchak dug a lot of wells, which we'll get to. And then in the story we have the dramatic story in this parasha about Yitzchak wanting to give the bracha, the ultimate bracha. He was going to confer it, he was going to give it to Esav. And at the end, Yaakov steals the brachas, and the brachas go where they were meant to go, which is to Yaakov, instigated by Rivka. That's essentially the parasha, more or less. Now, I just want to learn a little bit. What I want to do is I just want to share with you a couple of short things. 124, yeah. And then we'll go into a theme of the parasha, which is interesting to explore. Okay. So have a look at 124. Let's have a look at the beginning of the parasha. The Eile Tolda is Yitzchak ben Avraham. These are the children, the generations, the offspring of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham. Avraham Hoyle is Yitzchak. Avraham gave birth to Yitzchak. By he Yitzchak ben Arboim, Shono Yitzchak was 40 years old. Bekachto is Rivka when he took Rivka. Bas Besuel Ho'arami. Who was Rivka? Rivka was the daughter of Besuel Ho'arami. Mi Padan Aram, she came from Padan Aram. Achois Lavan Ho'arami Lo Isha. She was a sister of Lavan Ho'arami, and he took her for a wife. Then the parasha says, page 124. The parasha says, "Vayetar Yitzchak laHashem." Yitzchak davened to Hashem lenoichach ishtoi, opposite his wife. They stood in one room, and davened ki akorahi because she was barren, she was childless. Vayoser loy Hashem, and Hashem answered him. Vatahar Rivka ishtoi, and Rivka became pregnant. And then the whole story that the two babies were struggling in the womb. She thought it was one because when she went past her place of idol worship, one baby tried to get out, that was Esau, the place of learning, Torah learning, the other one, when it was Yaakov trying to get out, she thought it was one confused soul, so she went to find out, and that's where she got the news from the Navi, from the prophet, shame that actually she was pregnant with twins, and they would become two great nations, and so on. So as I said, I want to just share with you a couple of short ideas, and then explore a much bigger concept. So first of all, just an interesting thing I saw, in the name of the Torah, Moshe, the Chassam Sofer. And he says, what's the concept that Yitzchak davened specifically next to Rivka? They stood in one place davening. What's the emphasis? Loichach Ishtoi, right? Also, when it says Rivka here, it says Rivka again. It says that Yitzchak was 40 years when he took Rivka, who was the daughter of Besuel, the brother of Lavan. We already know all that, right? He says a very interesting thing, that normally when we say, the Gemara says, and when your Shulchan Aruch brings it down, when you daven for someone who's unwell, we know that you're supposed to say the person's name plus the name of a parent, right? The minhag is we use the mother's name, whatever the case is, but sometimes the father's name, actually, in case of non-Jews, we use the father's name, actually. Whatever the case is, but a parent's prayer, that's how you daven. However, there's also a concept brought down in Shulchan Aruch that when you daven for someone who is next to you, who is in front of you, you actually don't say the name altogether, right? You're not supposed to say the name. That's why like you don't... You don't say that you don't daven for a person in front of them. We're using the name. You just daven for them. You wish them a refuah shleima, or you say Hashem should help you, and so on and so on. You don't actually daven for them with the name in front of them. So Yitzchak had a problem. He wanted to daven for Rivka. He's davening for Rivka. She was childless. She should conceive. She should have a child. But he didn't want to use a name and the parent's name. Why? Because the parent's name is not good names to mention. She came from bad stock. She came from Besuel. She came from Lavan. He was worried that evoking the names of her parents or her family could maybe arouse what we call in halachic or spiritual language, kitruk, some sort of accusation, some sort of blockage for the blessing. Right? So what does he do? He davens the noichach ishto. He davens right next to her. So he shouldn't need to mention the name altogether. He says, that's why, says the Chacham Sofer, that's why the Pasuk says, Yitzchak was 40 years when he took Rivka. Who was Rivka? Rivka was the son of the daughter of Besuel, the brother of Lava. All these terrible people. Which is why, says the next Pasuk, Vayetar Yitzchak la'Hashem, Yitzchak davened Hashem, le'noichach ishto, next to his wife. So they shouldn't have to use the names. Very nice concept from the Chacham Sofer. Okay. Another beautiful idea from the Ben Ish Chai. I like the Ben Ish Chai stuff, in case you haven't noticed. So he says like this. Why does it say daven next to Rivka? Two things he says. Very beautiful things. He says, first of all, often when you daven for someone, you use the schus, what's called schus avos, the merit of our ancestors. We do this Rosh Hashanah all the time, right? We mention all the good things that Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov did, so Rivka Rachel Leah, all these things, right? So Yitzchak, when he davened, he wanted to mention, he wanted to emphasize the merit of Avraham. Where do we find two unbelievable mitzvahs of Avraham that we know created a very big schus going forward? One was the fact that after circumcision, he was so hospitable. And when the three guests showed up, he ran to the cattle. He was ailing. He was 99 years old. He was recuperating from surgery. And yet he was so, not only that he was hospitable with them, but he was enthusiastic in hospitality. He was passionate about it. Where do we see it? It says, Ve'el ha-bokar rotz Avram, that to the cattle Avraham ran. So he ran, even though he was in such a situation, and that we are taught that created an unbelievable schus, a very big mitzvah, that not only was hospitable, but he was hospitable with a passion, to the point of putting himself almost in danger of running to the bokar, running to the cattle. The other one is the Akedah, right? The Akedah we mention all the time. However, it's brought down in many Sfarim, what actually is exactly the schus of the Akedah? It's not just the Akedah itself. Because the truth... Sorry? Oh. It's the Zrizus. Why? Because actually it's brought down in many Sfarim that ask the question, why is the Akedah such an unbelievable thing? At the end of the day, Hashem appeared himself to Avraham Avinu. Right? Himself. A vision from Hashem. Okay, so there's the Pshat I think I mentioned 2 weeks ago that actually the Medrash says that it was a cryptic vision. That was part of the test. But nevertheless, the question is asked, if Hashem himself appears to you and says, this is what I want you to do, it's actually, especially if you have Avraham Avinu, it's like a given you're going to do it, right? Even though it involves the Akedah. However, the Svarim point out, many Mefarshim point out, the real schus of the Akedah was the zrizus, the quickness with which Avraham Avinu did it. He didn't procrastinate. After all, Hashem didn't say, do it today. He says, they do it right now, right? What does the Pasuk say? The Pasuk says, Vayashkem Avraham baboiker. Avraham got up in the morning early. Vayashkem means he got up early in the morning. He saddled his own donkey. He ran. He decided he's going to do the Ratzon Hashem, right? Which is an amazing thing. And we are taught that Zrizusei the Avraham, I think the Zohar says it even, that the Zrizus, the quickness of Avraham, that's what became the schus, that's what stands us in good stead for all generations. Not so much the Akedah itself, it's more the Zrizus that he got up in the morning. Says the Ben Ish Chai, that's why Yitzchak davened for Rivka, he wanted to bring up these two schus, these two merits. So he davened l'noichach Rivka ishto, he davened opposite Rivka, his wife. Because the word Rivka hints to these two merits. If you take the words Rivka and change them around, resh, veis, kuf, hey, you get habokar, the cattle, referring to Avraham Avinu running to the cattle, v'la bokar rotz Avraham. And the same word is haboiker, the morning. Avraham Avinu got up in the morning to do the Akedah. So Yitzchak davened l'noichach ishto, he davened next to his wife Rivka, in order to evoke, in order to bring out these two merits from Avraham Avinu. That's one thing it says. Second thing it says is, which he always does, he plays with the letters of the Aleph Beis in the most remarkable way, the Ben Ish Chai. Another Ben Ish Chai was a Sephardi, right? He was a Sephardi sage in Iraq. He says that Yitzchak knew that his tefillahs were, when Yitzchak davened next to Lenoichach Rivka Ishto, he davened next to his wife Rivka, he knew that his tefillahs were going to be answered. Why? So he brings, there's a Mishnah in Brachas, a very famous Mishnah, about one of the great Tannoim, one of the great sages of the Gemara, called Reb Chanino ben Doiso. Reb Ben Doiso was known to be a miracle worker. He was a person that was connected to supernatural concepts. And one of the things Reb Chanino ben Doiso would do, he would daven for people. But in Reb Chanino ben Doiso's case, he would be able to tell afterwards if the person's going to be okay or not. Why? So I asked him, how do you know? So it's very simple, because he was on that level. It doesn't apply to everyone, of course, but he would daven, sometimes his tefillahs wouldn't be answered. How would he know if his davening was answered or not? So it says, that Rabbi Chanina ben Doisa says that when I daven for someone, im shgurat shagura, that's the word, shagurat filasi b'fi, if the tefillah is very fluent and it goes very smoothly in my mouth, I know that Hashem is listening. Im eino shagura, if it's not shagura, if it's not working, it's I'm stammering, I'm falling over my words and it's just not working, I know that something's wrong. Now, don't try this at home. It's nothing to do with us. Our tefillah is always good. We have to try. And Hashem listens to our tefillah. We're not on that level to know signs in our tefillah, if it's been answered or not answered. We just have to believe that all our tefillah are powerful. But Rav Chaim Doisa knew this. Says the Ben Ish Chai, Yitzchak also knew the same thing. So when he davened, he knew that his tefillah were answered. Why? Because it says that he davened le'noichach ishto, he davened next to his wife, opposite his wife. Who is his wife? Rivka. If you take the words Rivka, what's this, right? What's after the reish? Shin. After the beis is a gimel. After the kuf is a no? Reish. And after the hay is a vav. Those four words make shagura. So he knew that his tefillahs, he davened l'noichach ishta next to Rivka, the letters next to Rivka are the words shagura. That his tefillahs were fluent. Tefillahs were fluent, he knew it was going to be okay. Next pasuk says, v'ta'a Rivka ishtoi. Rivka, his wife, conceived and she became pregnant. Okay. Those are two just very nice little things that that come from this week's parasha. Okay, now, for the rest of the time today, I want to actually explore a big theme of the parasha. As I always say when I do this kind of thing, I hope it's going to work. Mr. Hashem, I'll try my best to make it clear. But I want to explore a theme to do with Avram and Yitzchak and also its relevance to us. Based on three questions on this week's parasha. First of all, look at the first pasuk again. Ve'ele toldos Yitzchak ben Avram. These are the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Avram. Avram hoylidus Yitzchak. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. Famous question. That's a very superfluous expression. I mean, if you say Yitzchak, the son of Avram, presumably Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. Right? That's normally how it works, right? Right? So why does the pasuk say it again? This is the children of Avram, Yitzchak ben Avram. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. Why the repetition? Okay. Second question is, I'm going to ask three questions and then go into a whole concept, and then in the process of the concept, we'll answer these three questions. Second question is, we have a whole portion in this week's parasha about Yitzchak digging wells. Now, I know it's important to dig wells, because in those days you didn't open up a tap and get water. You had to dig wells. Digging wells were complicated in those days. Number one, you had to dig a well and it had to last. Like the water had to flow and it had to not dry up. Second of all, there were, as we see in the parasha, there were territorial issues with regard to wells. I dig a well, whose well is it? It's my well, it's your well. People argued with it. There was territory, property disputes over wells. Avraham Avinu dug certain wells in the Plishtim. The Philistines at the time filled them up and it didn't work. Yitzchak dug wells, he dug three wells, says the parasha. The two wells, there was a bit of politics, but eventually it was his. The third well, it was undisputed, it was very good, and so on and so forth. Agansa maisa about digging wells. Now, it was important, and I'm sure it was very important, it was the only source of water, but why is it necessary for us to know with such great detail and emphasis that Yitzchak was busy digging wells? It seems like we don't have actually. It's true. It's interesting. Out of the three of us, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, the least detail we have out of any of them is Yitzchak, right? And we know how he got married, but that was more to do with the story with Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu with Eliezer, he sent him to find a shidduch and so on and so forth. The only two main stories we have with Yitzchak is the wells. I mean, okay, the birth of his two sons, Davened, but the wells is a big story. Okay, he went to Avimelech, he had problems with his wife Rivka with Avimelech, right? And the brachas, okay, that he was going to give the bracha to Esau, and it ended up being Yaakov. Good. Out of all, that's it, a couple of stories. And one of the stories is this business of him digging wells. Obviously, it's not just about history. Torah is not a history book, so there must be something very, very deep here about digging wells. Okay? Second question. Third question, later on when he does give the bracha, this is going to be the bracha, right? This was the ultimate bracha that Yitzchak was going to pass on to Esav. This would be the destiny of Klal Yisrael, apparently, and so on and so forth. Rivka intervenes. It couldn't have gone to Esav. We've done the shir before many years ago why Yitzchak wanted to give it to Esav and why it didn't go to Esav at the end of the day. But anyway, it went to Yaakov. But we do see from the story that this was a very special bracha, right? How does that bracha begin, do you know? Three words. Many people say it on Matzah Shabbos. V'yitan l'cha l'kim. Hashem should give you, and he goes with a whole bunch of things, what he should give him. Lots of brachas. Right? Milchalat chim, tar shomayim, rain, produce, abundance, and so on and so on. We know the different names of Hashem. Primarily the name of Yudke Vovke and Elokeinu Elokim. Yudke Vovke is known as the name of infinity, the name of Chesed, the name of compassion. We begin the 13 attributes of mercy with Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum, Vachanun, and so on. The name of Elokim is the name of Din, name of justice, name of harshness, name of Tzimtzum, limitation, concealment, and so on. How does the ultimate bracha, that was such a big deal, that was supposed to go to Esav, or he wanted to give it to Esav, but it was really destined for Yaakov, and Esav was very upset, and it was a monumental, dramatic part of the parasha. How does this bracha begin? V'yitan l'cha Elokim. Surely this bracha should be V'yitan l'cha Hashem, not Elokim. Three questions, got it? So just summarize. Why the double expression in this pasuk? Avram, Yitzchak, son of Avram. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. Secondly, what's the emphasis on the wells? Thirdly, V'yitan l'cha Elokim. Why V'yitan l'cha Elokim and not Hashem? Okay. Ready? Good. Let's go into a whole in your net. So, we know like this. We know that Avram and Yitzchak represent the concept of Chesed and Gvura. Okay, we've done this before. So I want to explore this idea of Chesed and Gvura in a number of ways, primarily two ways. First of all, what is Chesed and Gvura and its relationship to Avram and Yitzchak, right? In one way, to understand how does it relate to our Avodas Hashem, what has it got to do with the way we serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu? In other words, what's the Avram in us and the Yitzchak in us, so to speak? And second of all, how does it relate to the way Hashem relates to the world? Okay, meaning our mission in life, as Avram Avinu did and Yitzchak did, is to reveal God in the world, as it says by Avram Avinu, Vayikra Shom B'Shem Hashem Keil Olam. Avram Avinu went and he broadcasted and he called in the name of Hashem. He publicized godliness and God and the authority of God and the monotheistic belief in God and so on in the world. What we'll discover is that bringing Hashem into the world, there's two ways to do it. There's an Avram method and a Yitzchak method, which is a Chesed method and a Gevura method. Okay, but they're two separate discussions. There's Chesed and Gevura, how it relates to us, how we connect to Hashem, and then there's Chesed and Gevura, how we bring Hashem into the world. Let's explore those two things. So in terms of us, we know that Chesed and Gevura represent the two middos, the two attributes of Ava and Yira, love and fear. So we'll talk about this a bit more soon, but there's a concept of loving Hashem and fearing Hashem. There's a mitzvah to love Hashem and mitzvah to fear Hashem. We'll discuss in a little bit what that means. But before we discuss exactly what that means, I want to actually show you a beautiful idea from the Ishvitzer, from the Me'ar Shiloach, of how it translates into the way we learn Torah. He says the Ava and Yira, love, I'm going to explore this a bit more in detail in terms of how it translates to the way we keep mitzvahs. But first of all, it actually has a great effect on how we learn Torah. And Ishvitzer says that when you learn Torah, you require, and this is, by the way, a very important thing. We've talked about this a lot on Thursday mornings specifically. One of the greatnesses of serving Hashem, one of the not challenges, but one of the things we have to achieve, is that Chesed and Gvura, Ava and Yira, love and fear, represent two very different personalities and different mindsets and different feelings, different emotions. In order to serve Hashem, we actually have to have both. This is part of becoming a Yid. This is part of transcending our personality. Because some of us are more chesed, some of us are more gvura, some of us are love, some of us are more fear. But the truth is, when we serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be really connected to Hashem, we have to transcend our own personality, our own limitations, and we actually need to incorporate and have both chesed and gvura. Where does it express itself in the learning of Torah? So say, Me'ar Shiloach says a very beautiful thing. He says, number one, you have to have chesed, you have to have ava, love. He says, brings a pasuk from Divrei Hayomim, which says that im tidrashenu yimotzei loch. This is what David HaMelech said to Shlomo his son. He says, if you'll seek him, if you'll seek the Torah, if you'll want to learn the Torah, if you'll be passionate about connecting to the Torah, it will be found for you. In other words, it'll be available to you. So the first Torah is the Torah of Hashem. The first thing a person needs to know in terms of learning Torah, is a person has to have a passion, a ratzon, a will to connect to the Torah, a love, an enthusiasm, an excitement to want to explore Torah. Right? That's a chesed concept, that love, that enthusiasm. Why is it so important? I mean, it's important with everything we do in love. Why is it so important with Torah specifically? Because Torah is not easy to grasp. Torah is Hashem's Torah. It's a transcendent intellect. It's something which is the wisdom of God. It's a divine wisdom. It's not really in our reach, actually. It's a gift that Hashem gives us, that we're able to learn Torah and understand the wisdom and the thinking of the way Hashem teaches us and the way Hashem looks at the world and the way Torah trains our mind. It's a big gift. How does that gift come about? Im tidrashenu, you have to look for it. You have to want to connect it. You have to love it. You have to pursue it. Pursuing anything is a concept of chesed. It's a concept of love, connecting to something. Yeah. Then he says that when a person learns Torah, to clarify the concepts of Torah in a very solid way, particularly when we learn Torah, I want to clarify the halacha part of Torah, the conclusion of Torah. We want to clarify the concept of Torah, how it translates and manifests itself in the way we live. You need to actually suddenly switch to the concept of Gevurah. Why Gevurah? Torah requires a very, very systematic, methodical breaking down of concepts. He brings a beautiful expression from the Gemara that talks about how Moshe Rabbeinu taught halachas, and it says there, it refers to Hashem there as Gevurah. It says, Shoma mipi ha-Gevurah. Moshe Rabbeinu heard this from the mouth of the Gevurah. Gevurah there refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why does he use the term Gevurah? Because if you're in a chesed mindset, you actually can't clarify any issue of halacha. Because one thing love doesn't have is, it doesn't have the mindset of compartmentalization, of sticking things in boxes, discipline, detail, right? The ability to think in a way where you put everything in its detail, this applies to this scenario, this applies to that scenario, this applies to this case but not to that case, which is something in Torah you need all the time, especially when you learn Gemara, you learn Halacha and so on and so forth, that's a Gevurah concept. Because Gevurah means it's here and it's not there. Hold it back. Ava doesn't hold anything back. Right? They used to say in the world of yeshivas, there's a very, very big difference between a Rosh Hashiva and a Rav. Rosh Hashiva is the head of an academy that teaches the theory. And then there's a Rav who can paskin a shaila, right? They used to say that Rosh Hashiva and a Rav are two very, very different kinds of people. Why? Because Rosh Hashiva learns and he goes deeper and deeper and deeper and he comes to some innovative ideas sometimes, but it can't actually reach the conclusion of halacha because it doesn't have the ability to stop it where it needs to be stopped and to compartmentalize where it needs to be compartmentalized. Although even everyone has to have Gevurah too, but I'm saying especially a Rav, right? Rav has to know where the halacha applies, where it doesn't apply, where you can use the logic, where you can't use the logic, and so on. But generally, this is the way we have to learn Torah. So a person needs chesed and Gevurah, both. So he says, this is what it means. Generally, it says, this is what it means, the Eile Toldos Yitzchak ben Avram. This is the children of Yitzchak, the son of Avram, because Avram gives birth to Yitzchak. Why? Doesn't explain why it's double yet. I'll get to that later. Why is Yitzchak the son of Avram? He says, because normally the way it works, especially initially, you've got to start with chesed. You've got to start with this amazing passion to connect to Torah. And that gives birth, if you're really passionate about learning Torah and you're committed to the Torah learning process, then you have to give birth to Yitzchak, which is the Gevurah, the regimented, disciplined way of thinking in order to actually understand and clarify the concepts of Torah properly. But he says, sometimes works the other way around also. And he brings an amazing, amazing interpretation of a Gemara. I'll try and communicate the best I can, but it's a Gemara which is actually quite a difficult Gemara. It's a Gemara that talks about technical laws of acquisition. So let me just give you a bit of background here so you'll understand. So, you know when you buy something, when you purchase something in Torah, or when you get a gift in Torah, whatever the case is, there's something we call a kinyan, okay? A kinyan. A kinyan means an acquisition, a method of acquisition, right? So if I go, just bear with me here a few minutes because it's very halachic and technical, but it's important to understand what I'm going to explain to you. So if I go to a store, for example, right? I mean, obviously in modern law as well, what's the point of transfer of ownership? So I want to buy a dozen eggs, a bottle of milk, whatever it is. At what point does it become mine? Sorry? No, it's actually not. In Torah law, at least, it's not. Depends what. We have a thing in Torah law called movable objects. So movable objects means things that you can pick up, right? So if I run into Krinsky's or Kohl's, whatever the case, right? And I say, I'm gonna take a dozen of eggs, here's the money. Right? I gave the money, eggs are not mine yet. When do the eggs become mine? When I pick it up. So the money doesn't buy me the object. So, No, it's relevant to breaking jugs. So let's say I run in, I give you $10, I'm going to take that box of tissues, or that dozen eggs, right? But on my way to the dozen eggs, someone knocks over the dozen eggs and it cracks. Whose problem is it? Store. It's the store's problem, because it's not mine yet. Even though I paid for it. No. Once I pick it up, it's my problem, right? So that's why it's relevant to know, in law, in legal, in the legal sense, it's relevant to know when has it become mine. Okay. Now, there's a problem in a very famous chapter in Baba Metzia. It talks about people who exchanged. Oh, sorry. And when it becomes mine, by the way, right? When the object becomes. This is, sorry, I forgot it. When it becomes mine, then the money becomes the store owner's. In other words, I'm the buyer, he's the seller. I gave him the money. The eggs are not mine, and the money's not his yet. Okay? Even if he picked up the money, money's not an object. Money's a money. When does the money become his? When the object becomes mine. Object becomes mine, money now becomes his. We're done. So for example, if I give the money and I haven't yet picked up the object, I can change my mind and he has to give back the money. It might not be the right thing to change your mind, the Gemara says, if you commit, you commit, you should keep it, but legally I can change my mind, right? Why? Because money's not mine. Follow? So therefore, when I pick up the object becomes the buyer's, the money becomes the seller's. Got it? So now, there's a very interesting Gemara that goes like this. If two people say, I'm going to give you, two people are trading silver and gold. So I say, I'm going to give you 50 silver coins in exchange for 25 golden coins. Right? It's Perek Hazor, famous Perek in the Gemara. Yeah? So which one is the money? Which one is the object? So you say silver's the money? Okay, so it wasn't so clear in the Gemara. Which one's the money? Which one's the object? Now it's very relevant to know, because if silver's the money and I give you the silver, the gold hasn't become mine yet and the silver hasn't become yours. I have to pick up the gold. If gold buys the silver, then as soon as you pick up the silver, then everything then becomes yours, right? Because, by the way, it works the other way around. Also, if I go into a store and I say I want to buy a dozen eggs, and he says, no problem, and I've picked up the eggs, even if I haven't paid for it yet, the eggs are not mine. Yeah, because I picked it up. I made the kinyan, right? Now I owe the money, right? Okay. So the mission over there says, it's a whole thing, it's a whole shayla over there. What buys what? Does the silver acquire the gold, or does the gold acquire the silver? So in the discussion, I'm not going to go into the whole discussion, it's very technical, very deep, and very complicated, but one of the things the Gemara brings there is this, that the Gemara says that Rebbe, the famous Rebbe, he taught Reb Shimon, he had a son called Reb Shimon, and he taught him, when Rebbe was young, he taught his son, silver acquires gold. So the silver buys the gold. Silver's the money, gold's the thing, right? But when he was old, Uvziknuse, he said, no, gold acquires the silver. Okay, so that's a very technical discussion, and that's a question raised in the Gemara, like which one is it? Did you change your mind? Have you made up your mind? Which one is it? Right? Okay. But he said when you're young, what did he say when he's young? When he was young, he taught that the silver buys the gold, right? When he was old, you taught the gold buys the silver. Says the Ishvitzer, such a beautiful thing. He takes the Gemara a little bit deeper onto a mystical level. He says like this. We know in Kabbalah, famous thing, he doesn't say this, it's a famous concept. Silver and gold refers to chesed and gevura. Chesed, silver is chesed, gold is gevura. For a number of reasons. The word kesef means lichsoif, to yearn, to love. That's the idea of chesed, that's the idea of kesef. Gold is fiery. Fire is always a symbol of gevura because it ascends, it withdraws. It's a concept of gevura. So many reasons. So kesef is love, zohav is fear. Kesef is chesed, zohav is gevura. Right? Says it just like this. This is what the Gemara is saying. When a person is young and he wants to acquire Torah, he wants to learn Torah, silver buys gold. You got to start with love. You got to have the passion. You got to yearn to learn. You got to have the chesed. You got to have Avram first. And then that buys what? That buys the gevura. That gives you the ability. Then if you're passionate enough, you will then come to have the ability of being disciplined and regimented in your thinking like gevura, and you'll be able to clarify matters of Torah. But then he says, the Gemara says, when a person gets older, sometimes the enthusiasm wanes. He loses the passion. And a person thinks, what should I do? I'm losing the passion. But he's already in the middle of learning. Says the Gemara, when you're old, stay committed. Stay the course. You're losing the passion? Keep learning. Keep committed. Keep with the zav. Keep with the gold. Keep with the gevura. Keep learning and keep trying hard. And that will bring back the passion. Isn't it amazing? Huh? What a way of explaining the Gemara. Right? So he says, that's the deeper pshat in the Gemara. Again, taking the Gemara completely out of its legal context, which is fine. They say they are Rizal, by the way. Every Gemara is like this. We know that even the chalak, even the portion of Halacha of Torah has very deep meanings to it. It's brought down about the Arizal that he used to learn a Gemara. He would study, not, he was a big makubli, he would study Kabbalah, but he would also study Gemara. Right? And it says when the Arizal used to learn Gemara, in the 6 days of the week, every day he would look at the Gemara from a different halachic angle. Shabbos, he would learn the Gemara from a mystical perspective. That's how the Arizal used to learn. That's what it says. Right? So every Gemara can be sort of many, many layers. As we know, every part of Torah is like that, right? So this is the pshat. He says this is the deeper meaning of the pshat. That when you're young, chesed has to bring to gevura. Silver buys gold. When you're older and the silver goes away, the love is lost, the gold brings back the silver. Beautiful pshat. Okay. So that's chesed and gevura in terms of Torah learning. Now, how does chesed and gevura work in terms of shmiras mitzvahs, learning mitzvahs, keeping mitzvahs? Let's just start from the very, very basic level here. This is a very important concept because actually these are two very important mitzvahs. Very difficult mitzvahs to keep, but they're two very important mitzvahs. If you look in those svarim, those great sages who enumerate the 630 mitzvahs, you will find the Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch, and all of them you will find that there are two mitzvahs. One comes from Parshas Va'eschanan and the Shema. One comes from Parshas Ekev. The mitzvah of loving Hashem and fearing Hashem. Right? The loving Hashem mitzvah, as we look in the Sefer HaChinuch, comes from the pasuk "Ve'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha," you shall love Hashem your God. Of course, both the Sefer HaChinuch and the Rambam and all the early Rishonim asked the famous question: how can there be a mitzvah to love something? You can't command someone you can command someone to do something, even if they don't want to do it. But it's very difficult to command someone to love something. They either love it or they don't, right? I either love Hashem or don't love Hashem. So the Sefer HaChinuch puts it very beautifully, as does the Rambam. The Rambam says the actual mitzvah is not so much loving of Hashem, it's the mitzvah to explore the pathway to loving Hashem. How do you do that? By trying to learn about Hashem and understand Hashem and understand His greatness, you will come to love Hashem, right? That's why the Sefer HaChinuch says a beautiful thing. He says, when we say Shema, we say, "V'ahavtas Hashem alakecha b'chol lebavcha v'chol nafshecha v'chol me'idecha." You shall love Hashem with your heart, your soul, and all your might. The next pasuk is, "V'hoyu hadavarim ha'ele." All these things that I'm commanding you should be on your heart. In other words, you should learn Torah. Right? What's the connection? Says that. That's the connection. Hashem says, "V'ahavtas Hashem alekecha." You should love Hashem, your God. You have a question how you can do that? Learn Torah. Explore Hashem's greatness. Try and understand as much as you possibly can about Hashem. And you will come to love Hashem. Okay. Then we have a mitzvah of Yiras Hashem. Yiras Hashem is a very, very difficult mitzvah to understand. People often battle with what does it exactly mean. So that in truth, it means many, many, many things. The idea of Yiras Hashem, the idea of fearing Hashem can operate on many, many different levels. If you look in the basic halachic svarim, or like the Sefer HaChinuch who goes through the mitzvahs, he says very simply, fearing Hashem means fearing the consequences of not doing what Hashem wants. I know we don't like to emphasize this too much, but the fact is that part of our 13 principles of faith is scharvoin, it's reward and punishment. There's reward. Keeping mitzvahs are good for us. Not doing mitzvahs is not good for us, right? So there's the consequences of mitzvahs. That's the basic idea of fear. If that can motivate a person to do mitzvahs, he doesn't want to, you know, he wants to do, every person wants to do what's good for them, right? Then there's, of course, deeper levels of fear. It's more translated as awe, sort of standing back, being in awe of Hashem. Some level, some healthy level of self-negation. All these things all fall into the concept of Yira. The truth is, on a very basic level, in a relationship, we have this in every relationship. There's love and there's respect. One is more chesed, one is more gvura. Love is more connecting to the person. Yira is more space, giving space to the person, respecting that person's needs, wants, wishes, and so on and so forth. Now, just to give you a little bit of overview of this concept, then we'll go into why we need both, why are both so important. In Kabbalah, we learn that there are two levels of what we call Yiras Hashem, and there are two levels of Avas Hashem. There are two levels of loving Hashem, and there are two levels of fearing Hashem. They are referred to, in using the terminology of Kabbalah, the love one is called Ahava Zuto and Ahava Rabba, small love, big love, and the two levels of fear are called Yira Tato and Yira Ilo, the lower level of fear, the higher level of fear. So, let me just explain the two levels of love first. So in Kabbalah, there's different ways to explain this, but this is one of them. So one of the ways to explain is as follows. A person can love something for two reasons. It can be a logical love or an ingrained love, right? So for example, I can love something because I've worked out that it's good for me. And because it's good for me, I want it, right? Or to give you a little bit of an analogy, you can have like a child, a parent loves a child. It's a love that transcends logic. It's just an ingrained, unconditional bond, right? We are commanded to love Hashem really on two levels. In other words, if we can't love Hashem on a deeper level, we can at least go through the first level, which is Ahava Zuta. Ahava Zuta means the small level of love, to be misboinen, to reflect, to learn, to understand, to come to the conclusion that being loving, connecting to Hashem is good for us. Right? In other words, if we learn properly and we understand the greatness of Hashem, and we come to a logical conclusion that Hashem created the world, everything in this world is dependent on Hashem. He is the source of all blessing. He controls everything. He's the only authority that only matters. He's the only true reality, and so on and so forth, right? In other words, I exist. I'm figuring out how Hashem relates to my existence. I come to the conclusion, the logical conclusion. You don't even need a big madriga for this. A logical conclusion that everything that is part of my existence depends on Hashem. So then it's worth loving it. Okay, so then in many places, in fact, in the book of Tanya explains this a lot. So we can come to love Hashem in two ways on that level. Either we can really feel it. That's hard. We're not all on that level, because the problem with us is that we have conflicting loves, because we also love things that our animal soul loves, like good food and pleasure and things like that. So it becomes a problem. But at least what we can do is we are taught that at least what we can do is we can develop this love in our mind, at least, right? So I can at least have what we call an intellectual love. In other words, I can come to the conclusion that Hashem is the really only worth goal pursuing. I want to pursue it. I get onto it. I do the mitzvahs. That's what we call Ahava Zuta. That's a lower level of love. What's Ahava Rabba? Ahava Rabba means where I come to a much deeper level of love, which really every yid has intrinsically, but it's hidden. And that's called the intrinsic love that every neshama has. What is every neshama? Every neshama has a burning love to Hashem. That's why we call it Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. The candle of Hashem is the neshama of a person. What does that mean? So in many places it says that just like a candle, fire, just like a candle burns upwards, right? Why does a candle burn upwards? So we taught the reason a candle burns upwards is because Hashem created the world with four foundational elements, fire, water, wind, and dust, right? The fire is the most spiritual of it. So therefore, every fire actually wants to leave. You need a wick to hold the fire down. Why do you need a wick to hold the fire down? Because actually every fire really wants to incorporate itself in its source, in its foundational source. That's what it says. So just like a fire is always going upwards, and neshama also, neshama really wants nothing else but to become one with Hashem, right? And therefore it has an intrinsic super rational love just to leave the physical existence here and become one with Hashem. To the point that the neshama is not even interested if it's good for the neshama, not good for the neshama, just wants to become one with Hashem, even if it means getting rid of its own existence. In other words, just wants to just connect and become one with Hashem. Okay, that's a higher level of love. It's called Ahava Rabba. Those are two levels of love. Two levels of fear. So Yira Tata The lower level of fear is a very, very basic level of fear. Yirat HaTov means, I don't love Hashem, I don't feel it, and I think, but I understand he's boss, and I'm subservient to him, because I know he's in control, I know he's in charge, he's boss, and that's it. That's just a very basic, it's called Kabbalah so. It's a very basic level of fear. In other words, sorry? Very good place to start. It's the basis, right? I'm going to get there in a second, where you start. You're right, that is the base, right? Then on the other side of the spectrum is what Kabbalah calls Yirui Law. Yirui Law means even higher than love. You see, love, even at the greatest level of love, it's still I love, it's still me, right? The greatest level of fear, most people can't even reach, but we are taught that people like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, it says we're able to reach that level, it's total self-negation. In other words, you get to the level where I don't exist. I'm nothing. I'm just part of Hashem's reality. And you really feel that. In other words, not just in your mind, right? So, like Rav Shimon, I give Rav Shimon Bar Yochai as an analogy because Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says in the Zohar, "Ano simona ba'alma." I'm just a code for Hashem. That's all I am. I'm nothing. I have no self-existence whatsoever. That's a very high level of what we call bittul. Okay. Why am I explaining to you these four levels? Because I want to answer one of the questions I said before. So the way a person works is, starting point of every person is the lower level of fear. Yira tato. That's how you start. If nothing else, how you train a child, how do you train yourself to start with? How do we get up in the morning if we're not in the mood and we don't have any particular dose of love for Hashem? We just do it because Hashem is the boss. The lower level of fear. Yira tato. You do it because I've got to follow what Hashem says, right? Okay. Then you've got to work on love. Yira is not could be, but because that kind of fear is good, but it means I'm still totally disconnected. I'm doing it out of force. It's an imposition. I'm imposing it upon myself, right? Then you're going to start working on love. Ava zutta and ava rabba. First, the first level of love and the second level of love. And then, the highest madrega that a person can possibly come to, after he's gone through the level of the basic level of fear, then the two levels of love, what's the ultimate level of a person's connection? Yiro Ilah, the high level of fear. Which is all hinted in the first pasuk of this week's parasha. Have a look. We ask the question, why does it have a double expression? Yitzchak, the son of Avram. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. So there's Rashi's, there's different mepharshim, but this is the one I'm sharing with you today. If you look at the pasuk, it's got Yitzchak twice and Avram twice. Why? Yitzchak is fear, Avram is love. Avram is chesed, Yitzchak is gevura. There are two levels of fear, two levels of love. What's the order? Lower level of fear, love one, love two, and then the higher level of fear. That's exactly how it happens in this pasuk. Yitzchak, Avram, Avram, Yitzchak. Yitzchak, son of Avram, Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. So you start with Yitzchak. You start with the basic level of subservience. That's fear. Yira tato. Son of Avram. Right? Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. So that's Yitzchak. Yitzchak is the either end. That's two levels of fear. In the middle you have two Avrams, two levels of love, which is Ava Zutta and Ava Rabba. Now, just taking it a bit further. Oh, time's rushing away. I want to share with you one idea. So it says in many, many places, why do we have two mitzvahs? Why is the mitzvah of both loving Hashem and fearing Hashem? So many places it says that avas Hashem, love of Hashem, motivates positive mitzvahs. Fear of Hashem motivates negative mitzvahs. In other words, I love Hashem, so I want to do what's going to connect me to Hashem. Every mitzvah I do connects me to Hashem. So love of Hashem makes me do positive mitzvahs. Fear of Hashem means, I'm in awe of Hashem, or I fear Hashem, or whatever level, on a basic level, right? So therefore, I don't want to do what's going to upset him. He tells me not to eat trafes. I don't want to do that because it's going to upset him, right? Just like my person. Right? That's what it says in many, many places. The question I have is that really true? In other words, why can't that all come from love, for example? Or why can't that all come from fear? Why do we have actually two mitzvahs? Without going to the different madrigas and everything, just on a very basic level. In other words, if I really love someone, I'll do what they want. I also won't do what they don't like, because I love them. Right? Same thing with fear. If I'm in awe of someone, there's a king, he's whatever he says goes, I'm working for it. I'll do what he tells me to do, and I won't do what he doesn't tell me to do. So the truth is both Ava and Yira can motivate both. What's the reason? So I saw once a beautiful explanation that goes something like this, and I'm making it very brief because I want to go on to the next thing so we can finish the concept. Love and fear are two mindsets. Right? As I said before, love has more to do with what I want and my passion. Fear has more to do with the person I'm fearing, in other words, or the one I'm fearing, or awe, right? So like this. If I love Hashem, only love Hashem, I don't fear Him. In other words, I have only Ava, not Yira. Only Avram, and not Yitzchak. So I'll be very, very passionate about doing the mitzvahs. Of course, I'll bench Lulav, and I'll put on tefillin, and I'll light Shabbos candle. I'll be very, very excited, right? What I might miss, however, are the nuances. In other words, there might be, you know, many halachas are very specifics, right? In other words, of course I'm going to keep Shabbos with a passion, with a simcha, with a joy, because I love Hashem, right? But I might forget that when I make tea, to use an example, that actually the second cup is no good, I need a third cup, right? Why? Because that kind of detail, that kind of nuance comes from a mindset of fear, not from love. In other words, love is more what I'm doing. So you miss the things that make no sense to me. Yeah, Hashem wants me to Shabbos, of course, Shabbos, not to cook, I won't cook. He doesn't want me to do the second cup or the third cup. It's okay, like I need another cup. I mean, that's like, so in my, it's possible if you have only love, that's, love is still you, I love, so it's possible to make mistakes in things particularly that aren't logical. I'll give you an example. I'll give you an example so you see it clearly. In Tanakh, Shaul HaMelech, King Saul, right? He fights the war of Amalek and he makes a mistake. He keeps the king alive, right? It's exactly what happened. You think Shaul didn't love Hashem? Of course he loved Hashem. He put himself in danger. He waged the whole war to do what Hashem wants. But that like exactness, that discipline that Hashem said, no, I want you to kill every single person and includes the king. I can't. Animals can't be so bad. On the contrary, animals are good for sacrifices. Lost that. What was he missing? Love? No, he was missing fear. Okay? Conversely, it works the opposite also. Fear means I'm very exact, right? So if I'm in awe of Hashem, and I know he's boss, and I'm not going to do anything to upset him, I'll do negative commandments, I'll do positive commandments, and I'll keep every halacha down to its last detail. Third cup, tenth cup, whatever he wants. But what I might be missing is the other opposite. I might be missing the passion. I might not do more than I need to do. I might not go the extra mile. I might not do early in the morning. The zrizus, that extra enthusiasm, extra passion, that doesn't come from fear, that comes from love. Understand? That's why Hashem gives us, in terms of serving mitzvahs, He gives us two mitzvahs. The foundation of all the mitzvahs become love and fear. And that, again, it's difficult because different people have different personalities. The truth is we have to do both. On the one hand, we do a mitzvah, we have to be very caught up. We have to be very exact. I know exactly what Hashem wants. If it's a lulav, it's got to be exactly a certain size. And if it's too short, it's no good. That's the yira. On the other hand, you also got to be excited about it, learn about it, and get up in the morning and be excited, and go early and do more than you need to do. That comes from love. Those two aspects of mitzvahs come from Ava v'Yira. Okay. That's how we serve Hashem with Yitzchak and Avraham. Now let's go to the second issue, if we can do it briefly, I guess. Of how Hashem relates to the world. We have to bring Hashem into the world, and there's two ways to do that. One is what we call Hamshacha, the other one is called Halo. Avraham Avinu, he revealed God into the world by way of Chesed. What does that mean? He broadcasted Hashem into the world, meaning the world is a place where Hashem wasn't there. The world is a place that didn't believe in Hashem. The world seemed like a place that was incompatible with godliness and God. Right? What does Avraham Avinu do? He gives Hashem to the world. He doesn't care. Arabs walking in the street, doesn't care who it is. He's pumping Hashem into the world. Right? That's Chesed. That was Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was Achnasas Orchim. Hospitality, which is also in Shiv Chesed, it wasn't just hospitality in the technical sense, it was also hospitality in the way he revealed Hashem. He brought people to his house and says, okay, now let's bench. Go. They do want to bench, don't want to bench. He's pumping it, he's revealing Hashem into the world. Right? That's one way to do it. Yitzchak took a different derech. What's Yitzchak? Yitzchak's way of doing it is what we call halo, elevation, not bringing down, but lifting up. Yitzchak says, I'm going to dig wells. That's why Yitzchak dug wells. What's digging wells? A well means that you look at the world and it's a dry place. You dig. You move it away from being a dry place. you reveal that actually you're not a dry place. You're actually a source of water. You're a source of life. Right? One of the ways to come connecting by the way, we have the same thing the way we serve Hashem also. When we learn Torah, we bring Hashem into our being. When we do a mitzvah, we daven, we elevate ourselves. We move away. Moving away from the world, elevating, coming, us becoming higher, rather than remaining in the same place and being Hashem unto us, that's chesed. Becoming higher is gevura. Gevura means moving away from the world. Moving away from where you are and becoming something else. That's a gevura concept. That's like fire. Fire elevates. Right? What's greater? What do you think is greater? Which one is greater? The truth is, it's the subject of a whole nother shir. But, in Bekitzer, and there's different ways to understand this, each one has advantages, but ultimately, Yitzchak is much greater. That's why the Gemara says that when Mashiach will come, we'll say to Yitzchak, Ki Ato Avin, Yitzchak will be the main father. Why? Because Gvura is greater than Chesed. Why? Because chesed is limited. Chesed means I bring chesed unto me, but I'm only going to take it as much as I can handle it. Because I haven't changed. Right? Yitzchak is transformation. Gvura is transformation. And we know that when you transform something that's resistant, that's concealment, that's tzimtzum, that's harsh, into a real blessing, it's a much bigger blessing. You know what rain is called in the Gemara? Gevurois kshamim, the strength of rain. A bracha that comes from transformed gevura is greater than a bracha that comes from chesed. Because the power of transformation is unbelievable. The power of transformation is unlimited. If you can take an area, an environment of gevura, that the world is, it's an environment of tzimtzum, it's an environment of complete concealment. Hashem is hidden in the world. And you can start to move it away, in a gevura way, you can start to move it away from its concealment and move towards Hashem. It's an unlimited process, infinite. Once you start elevating, you can elevate as much as you want. Transformed gevura is much greater than chesed. However, you cannot start like that. The way to get the world going, the way to get ourselves going is, before we can transform and show that we are really compatible to Hashem, we've just got to impose Hashem on us. In other words, we've got to saturate the world with Hashem. First, Avraham comes before Yitzchak. Only when Mashiach will come, we won't need so much the chesed. It will be more just gevura. Meaning, Mashiach will come, we'll look at every part of the world and just say, we can see right away how it's connected to Hashem. Right now, if we start with, we've got to first just, right? It's like when you bring someone close to Yiddishkeit, first just got to bring him to a Shabbos meal and a davening and a nigun and a kumzitz, chesed, like a Romavina did. First got to start a Romavina's method. Without the person having to work hard. Just to get it to soften the environment a bit. Then you start, okay, now time to work hard. Mister, now you gotta, it's really part of you. You can become this. Don't say it, it's nice, you're just absorbing it, but it's not you. You can actually become it. The Gevura comes later. Avraham comes first, then comes Yitzchak. Ultimately, the bracha of Yitzchak is much greater. Which is why when Yitzchak gives the bracha, the ultimate bracha, the bracha that will carry us all to Mashiach, he says, V'yitul l'cho ha'lakim. It's a bracha of Elakim, it's not a bracha of Hashem. Because a bracha that comes from Elakim, meaning, comes with the hard work of transforming the gevura into bracha, that's the ultimate bracha. Yitul l'cho yudkei vavke, yitul l'cho Hashem, powerful bracha, an easy bracha. It's a bracha that's revealed good, true. But it's not as powerful as a bracha which comes from transformed gevura. V'yitul l'cho ha'lakim, is transformed gevura. That's the ultimate bracha. So that answers all the three questions. And now we know why there's two double expression in the first pasuk, because there's two Yitzchaks, two Avraham. The way we serve Hashem, there's two levels of Ava, two levels of Yira. You start with a lower level of fear, two levels of love, ultimate level of fear. We understand why it's serving Hashem. We need both the concept of Ava and Yira. But then in terms of how Hashem relates to the world, bringing Hashem into the world is chesed. Elevating the world higher, that's gevura. You've got to start bringing Hashem into the world, then elevate the world. That's how it works. But the ultimate bracha comes from transforming the gevura, and that's V'yitul l'cho ha'lakim. The ultimate is Yitzchak. That's why, although Yitzchak is gevura, his name is Yitzchak. What's Yitzchak mean? Laughter. Happiness. You would normally associate laughter and happiness with chesed, not with gevura. Because the ultimate pleasure, the ultimate happiness, the ultimate laughter is transformed gvura, not just pure chesed.
Wow.
Good.
Sure.